Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
858 Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley's behind the glass. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop on and join the show tonight. As we've been talking about a bunch of different things, including the Joe Flacco signing by the Eagles, I like it. And I think the negativity surrounding it is really over the top. It is a solid deal for a backup quarterback with a lot of experience that can be competition here, but can also kind of move aside and let Hurts take the job. I like the Joe Flacco signing. And, of course, we are waiting and watching and hoping that Daryl Morey makes a move or two before the deadline at 3 o'clock tomorrow. I'm hoping for Kyle Lowry. And if we get any news during the show tonight, Tucker has the sounder in there waiting. There it is. If you're not familiar, it's the Cameroonian national anthem for Joel Embiid, of course. So we'll be playing that. Hopefully, Joel. You think Joel's streaming the show tonight, listening?
I mean, it's a top 10 national anthem.
Do you actually have a list?
I mean, Canada's number one. I don't know if that's not patriotic, but Canada's tops.
This is off the Olympics? Because that's when you hear all of them.
The Olympics, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a Spotify playlist of national anthems.
Seems like a bit much. That's just for walking around?
I'm walking around when I'm thinking about the UN, anything, really.
Hey, all right, so UN talk with Tucker. We'll get back to all that. Right now, we have to go to the guest line here and, of course, bring on our buddy Scott Lauber of the Philadelphia Inquirer to talk some Phils, a Clearwater check-in. Not many of the Clearwater check-ins left because while they're about to leave Clearwater in a little less than a week, they come up here for opening day. Scott, how you doing tonight?
Hey, guys, how are you? I'll tell you what, I could listen to an hour of just national anthems. That's terrific.
Well, you and Tucker would get along. He's playing them back there like there's no tomorrow. So maybe
he's right. O Canada is the best. There's no doubt about it.
Does that mean that you guys are not patriotic? Is that what we're hearing here?
No, it means I love it when the Flyers play Canadian teams because you get to hear it. It's terrific. I love it when the Phillies play interleague against the Blue Jays.
Well, I agree with both of you. It is a great national anthem. And
great song.
Yes, it is. Do they play each other this year? Do the Phillies play the Blue Jays?
They're not
in Toronto, though.
Well, you know what? I have to look at the calendar to see when. I want to say it's late, so there's a chance, you know. But, hey, look, I mean, when they play them in spring training in Dunedin, they play it before every game. So there you go.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. I'm glad they do. So, Scott, regardless of when or where they play the Blue Jays, we do have a season that starts next week at home against the Braves, and there are some questions that we still need answering. Scott, it feels like the center field battle got a twist yesterday with Adam Haseley returning. So how do you handicap this battle that is so hard to predict right now? Haseley's back and healthy. I'd say Odubel has gone the other way. He's not hitting as well as he was a week ago. Roman Quinn's talking to Kenny Lofton. Kingery's still struggling. What's your take on everything right now?
Yeah, my view of it's changed a little bit, and this is just my take on it. You know, trying to read the tea leaves a little bit, trying to get as much as we can out of what Joe Girardi tells us every day, and talking to some people around the organization and trying to pick up some signs. I don't know. I mean, I've sort of felt from the beginning that because Odubel Herrera is not on the 40-man roster, that he had to win this job more than the other three. He had to really go out there and win it. And I don't think he's done that. I mean, I think he's had some moments, you know, he's got the three home runs. He's had some good at bats. Joe Girardi keeps saying how he's faced so many lefties, and that's true, but I don't know that he's going to get graded on a curve because of that, per se. I think that he really needed to go out there and have, like, a great spring training to put himself back on the 40-man roster, and he hasn't done that. So Roman Quinn has had a kind of a quiet, really quiet but very good spring training, especially the last, you know, 2-3 weeks. He's making a lot more contact. He's getting on base a lot more. You're right about Haseley kind of being sort of a late twist here, coming back about a week or a week and a half sooner than they thought when he was originally hurt. In the absence of somebody actually coming out and having won this this thing, and I guess somebody could go out there and have, like, you know, the Phil Gosselin style final 5 days and just go like 12 for 12 and win this thing. But in the absence of that happening, I think they probably stay with the guys they have on the 40-man. And the beauty of the Odubel Herrera situation is that you can send him to the alternate site and he's going to go. I mean, there's no opt out and there's no reason to rush into putting him on the 40-man if you don't have to. And right now, they don't have to because he hasn't won the job.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing, that, you know, you have to run away with it to get on that 40-man roster, and he hasn't so far. So it could make it a little bit easier for them, Scott, as we move down the stretch. And also the complications they have with the 40-man, both at center field, the infield, the reserve infield, and the pitching staff, it's all going to kind of come into one big decision. Let's go to the bullpen here, Scott. For a couple weeks, I was under the assumption that Kinsler and Watson weren't on the team, but kind of were on the team. Do you think both make it now? Because if they don't take both, that does free another 40-man spot up.
I think one of them for sure is, and I think if you had to rank them, I think Kinsler's probably ahead of Watson right now, for a few reasons. You know, I think that he's had a better spring, but I also think that he closed as recently as last year, and, you know, I think they feel like there's more of a role for him, clear-cut role for him late in the games. I think there's still a chance they could both make it, and I don't know if it's a 40-man complication as much as it is just a financial one, because they are over $200 million for the luxury tax. They want to leave themselves some wiggle room for an in-season move or two. And if you put Kinsler and Watson on the team, they each cost you $3 million. So it's going to eat into your financial flexibility there a little bit. And they've been burned before. They've left room for themselves in season and haven't been good enough to make a real meaningful move at the trade deadline. So you could make the argument, you know, just guarantee yourself of being a better team now. If you think Watson's going to make you better, put him on the team now. You may not be able to get a better reliever than that at the trade deadline. So they have a lot to talk through. There is the 40-man issue, because they both need to get put on the 40-man, but there's, like I said, a financial component too, in terms of how close do you want to get to $210 million before the season starts.
Yeah, and that could be something that we talk about a lot when we get into the season. If they need a reinforcement in center or the rotation or the bullpen, and if they're close, that could be an issue there. Scott Lauber of the Inquirer joining us here, talking Phillies as we get closer to opening day. Scott, so today was an opt-out date. Jeff Mathis is now off this team. I believe Kinsler and Watson had opt-outs in their contract. So do you read the fact that they're still here, they didn't opt out, does that give you thought that they're going to make the team, that they think they might make the team? Explain to the audience how those things work and why some guys would take the opt-out and why some guys would kind of hold around and hang on and wait another couple days.
So I guess the Phillies could come right out and say, hey, Brandon Kinsler, you're on the team, and then he doesn't have to exercise the opt-out. But what normally happens is, Kinsler's agent will call the Phillies. He'll say, okay, we're going to exercise our opt-out. And then that gives the Phillies 48 hours to decide, are we going to put him on the roster or are we going to let him go and essentially become a free agent, and he can go sign with any team he wants. So just because they say we're going to opt out does not mean that they're gone. They're sort of in a 48-hour limbo for the Phillies to make a decision. The thinking is they're both going to opt out. They're both going to say, look, we're going to put pressure on the Phillies to make a decision here. And then the Phillies have until, essentially Friday night or Saturday to decide what they're going to do. And so that's typically how it works. But I guess, like I said, you know, the Phillies could, in theory, put an end to this sooner by saying you're on the team. So, I mean, they'll probably end up doing the dance, and we'll find out late in the week, maybe first thing over the weekend, what's going to happen to those two guys.
Scott, JT Realmuto came back last night, and his first at-bat, boom, home run. Do we overrate this whole spring training thing? It seems like he didn't need much, and he looked just fine in that box his first at-bat.
Yeah, you know, a friend of mine texted me shortly after that and said, hey, didn't Harper homer in his first at-bat too? And I said, yeah, he did. You know, and I think Adam Haseley homered in his first at-bat also of the spring back in at the end of February. So it happens, you know, that guys take that first swing and it goes over the fence. You know, for me, the bigger thing with Realmuto last night, bigger than that swing, was the two throws he made down to second base, because he's been hitting. You know, I mean, he said all along that the thumb bothered him more when he threw than when he hit. So he's been getting, you know, 8 or 10 at-bats a day in simulated games. So I wasn't surprised to see him take a good cut and hit the ball out of the ballpark. But, you know, the fact that he was able to make two throws, he didn't throw the runners out, but he made the throws. They were strong throws, and the thumb didn't bother him afterwards, I know from talking to him last night, was what he was most excited about, and I think that's what the Phillies were most encouraged about, because that's such a huge part of his game back there, throwing out runners. And I think he was thankful that the Blue Jays tried to take a few bases against him. He was thankful that he had a chance to test it out. And as long as he keeps passing those tests, there's going to be no question he's ready for opening day. So it wasn't so much the hitting. It was more what he was able to do behind the plate, which was a good sign.
Scott Lauber of the Inquirer with us. Scott, last one for you. So, you know, we know they have big decisions in center field. They have a decision in the bullpen. But the one decision I didn't expect to be talking about, but now it seems like we have to, is reserve infielder. I mean, Scott Kingery probably has the job locked down just because he could play all the positions, and he has a contract here, so he's going to be one of them. But Brad Miller was supposed to be the other. Third base, first base, even some outfield. Seems like he might not be ready for opening day. Where would they go with that second infielder? Because none of their outfield reserves other than Kingery have that kind of versatility. It's not like they could use Roman Quinn or Haseley or Matt Joyce in the infield, really. So they would need another infielder here. Do you think a Ronald Torres would have a shot at this? A guy Girardi knows from New York. Would they dive back into the Chatham and Maton guys that were there a couple weeks ago? Where do you think they'd go for that other infielder if Miller's not ready?
They could do all of those things. I mean, the Torres is interesting because, like you mentioned, Girardi has the history there with him in New York, but that's another 40-man decision because he's not on the 40-man roster. So do you clear a spot for a guy who you might not have on your roster for more than a couple of weeks? Because I don't think Brad Miller is going to be too long after opening day if he's not ready on opening day. So, you know, that complicates things with him. I could certainly see bringing back a Chatham or a Maton because they are on the 40-man, and, you know, they would be short-term solutions. I think Maton in particular is a guy that they like, who's impressed them in the minor leagues. I don't know that he's ready for this, but, you know, certainly a name to watch. The other thing I think that they could do, and I've asked Girardi about this a number of times in spring training, and he has essentially been consistent in saying, I think we want to break camp with 8 relievers, but they could always break camp with 9. It wouldn't be the end of the world to have a short bench for the first 2 weeks, you figure, or for the first 10 days. You figure you're not going to do a whole lot of, you know, your lineup is pretty well set, in terms of your regulars, except for center field. And it wouldn't hurt to have an extra pitcher who could help you early in the season when you don't know if your starters are going to be able to give you 7, per start right away. So he's been consistent in saying he wants to keep 8 relievers instead of 9. But if Miller can't go and they lack another bench option, I could see them maybe putting an extra reliever on there for a short period of time. And it kind of gives them some coverage if they need it, with that pitching staff early in the season.
Yeah, and they could delay the real decision until Brad Miller gets healthy. That's an interesting thought there. Scott, always appreciate hopping on. We'll be reading at the Inquirer, and we're just over a week from opening day. It's baseball's almost here again, Scott. It's great to know that.
It is, isn't it? So thanks for having me.
You got it. There we go. Scott Lauber of The Inquirer. Scott, also a big fan of national anthems like Tucker, we found out. I mean, is this a big group that I'm not part of?
Yeah, apparently. Me and Scott host a podcast on national anthems.
At this point, there's a podcast on everything, I think, except that. There might be a hole in the market.
Yeah, I mean, like, we both love O Canada. A lot of European ones I'm impressed by. Uruguay, which I know is in South America. They have a really good national anthem. Italy,
Let's say you were going to do a podcast with our buddy Scott Lauber, The Inquirer, about national anthems. What do you think? Like, give me the flow of the podcast. Would this be you play one, you talk about it, or you play?
Yeah, I think we would dissect one national anthem per episode. You would go into the history, who wrote it, where it came from, when it became the national anthem. You know, if you just take the United States, for example, obviously it was written by Francis Scott Key.
Yeah.
After what he witnessed during the War of 1812 in Baltimore, we could talk about that. And how it slowly became just ingrained in our culture. I mean,
you could have me on. I mean, I used to live north of Baltimore. And I've been to Federal Hill many times. That area is a lively area now down in Baltimore. That's where he was, Federal Hill.
Okay.
See, I know. Like you're talking Francis Scott Key. You got to bring me on. I could be a guest on this.
You're a Francis Scott Key expert.
Well, I mean, I know where Federal Hill is. I mean, that's better than you. 215-592-90.
You come on and point to a map where Federal Hill is and then slink off.
I mean, I could give you some context. You're trying to do a whole podcast on a national anthem. Also, how many countries are there in the world?
Total?
Yeah. A
couple hundred, I guess.
All right. You do podcasts a week. You got a couple years of content.
Yeah, but there are always new countries popping up here and there. May discover something new. Who knows?
That's not true. that's not really a fact. 215-592-9494. Here is a fact. Chris from Phoenixville is on the phone lines. What's up, Chris? Oh, I thought Chris was. Chris going once. Chris going twice. Chris goes back on hold until he gets...
Hold on.
Oh, there he is. I got you, Chris. What's up?
I got two phones going, like Howard Erskine. But,
oh, wow. We got
a
baby Erskine.
I have a little bit more of a patience than most, because I wouldn't have to wait in line if I did it for a living. So, anyhow, what do you guys want to talk about tonight?
Well, I mean...
You're the caller.
Yeah, listen, we got some...
I can talk about a plethora of things. But
well, we got Flacco, we got the Phils. What's your thought
on
Flacco?
The Phils. I stick to my niche. Okay. I'm a pro ball, ex-pro ball, 46, washed up, financial advisor now, because if I couldn't throw strikes, but I could figure out my ERA, I could be your financial advisor and figure out the returns on your investment. But I'm also a sports agent, but who cares about that? Enough about me. What's going on with the Phillies is they're not responding to my FedEx. The best move they can do is hire me as the independent consultant. I sent a FedEx to Middleton, who's probably hiding underneath the chair of the guy from the Eagles, that other guy that shouldn't be involved with the it's like Smithers or the guy from The Simpsons, where the owner should not be involved in the day-to-day transactions. If you're a real owner, you got to know how to delegate to people that know what the hell they're doing. The Phillies suck because it starts from the top down and not the bottom up. They don't know how to develop, and it starts because they don't know how to hire. And they have the same people that are quote-unquote loyal, but you don't need a lot of people. You just need the quality people that know what the hell they're doing and play baseball and also know how to articulate to other people. So the bottom line is they've been doing for decades. This isn't one administration, just like the White House. It's not one administration that screwed up the cesspool of what's going on in today's society. It's a plethora of idiots and the system's charred that they need to know what to do the right way. People leave organizations because of lack of leadership. Losing organizations like the Phillies, they have the most losses, I'm assuming, is because of lack of leadership. It's no lie that the Braves are good because they can develop players. It's no lie that the Royals are good because Peyton Moore used to scout me when he was with the Braves. It comes down to being able to have a system in place that you can replicate and stop selling us a bunch of snake oil each year when you have clear dysfunction across the board. From Rhys Hoskins has the yips. He's the equivalent of Vince Velasquez when it comes to pitching. They've got million-dollar prospects but 10-cent brains, and if you're starting to do launch angle has been around in baseball since Hector was a pup. And that's a phrase I got from my dad.
Yeah, Ted Williams was using launch angle.
Yeah, so the end of the day is tomorrow, and tomorrow you're waking up and the same guy's making the same mistakes, and you know what Einstein says. Well, I say if you want to act like everybody else and you're going to expect better than average results, you're an idiot. So it comes down to doing the right thing, being different than others. I thought you're right. The Eagles signing Flacco is actually the right move, because if this owner wants a deep game, well, nobody really knows what Hurts got. I'm a big fan of Hurts. I don't know why the heck you would even go up in the draft to get a Division One AA quarterback in Wentz and trade for him. I mean, the Eagles have had history of bad first-round picks. It's not just Howie Roseman. We can go back to Taylor or whatever his name, Harris, whoever the guy who got shot or stabbed from the middle of nowhere that never made it anywhere. And then we got, more recently, Rhys Hoskins is like the next Moss from the Yankees. He came up like 30 home runs in 30 games and hasn't had a hit since then.
Kevin Moss! So yeah, that's a blast from the past.
He's got the yips. He's got to stop. It's got to be the top hand to start your swing, bottom hand to extend through the swing.
Yeah, and listen, I hope he bounces back from the injury. Chris, I appreciate the phone call. Chris threw a lot at us there. I will say, from Ron and Monco last hour saying Rhys Hoskins is not a big leaguer, to now our buddy in Phoenixville there talking, bringing up the Kevin Moss comp for Rhys Hoskins. I can be critical of Rhys. I have been before. I think he is an awful defensive player. That I have to hold my breath when the ball comes near him. He's the worst outfielder I've ever watched with my eyes play a full season in the outfield. But as an offensive player, I do think we now have begun to underrate Rhys Hoskins. Like his career OPS plus, his adjusted OPS, is 125. He's 25% above average as an offensive player now in, what is this? Is this 4 years? Yeah, 17, 18, 19, 20. Two were really short, right? He came up in August 17. Last year was 2 months. He got hurt. Let's call it 3 years of production. How many games has Rhys played in the big leagues?
404.
3 years, right? 162 times three, a little less than three full seasons, whatever. He's been 25% above average. We talk about him like he can't play. He can't hit. He can.
Yeah, I mean, his career slugging percentage is .495. What's odd is, as you talked about it, I brought up his baseball reference page, and his projections for 2021 are startlingly low.
Well, projections as a whole are usually on the lower end, but what are his?
So they expect him to have 520 plate appearances, okay, which would be lower than either of his two full seasons.
Let's see if I can guess some counting numbers. They're going to project him for 80 walks, 85 walks?
75.
Seems low.
Seems low because he led the league in walks in 2019.
About 140 strikeouts.
124.
Okay, so I was a little high on that. They go with a 840 OPS?
830.
28 home runs?
24, 69 RBIs.
That's low.
Like that, those are all career lows for him.
How many runs scored?
71.
If he's batting second all year in front of Bryce, JT, and Bohm, you would think he's going to score more runs. He gets on base all the time.
Yeah, I mean, think about 2019. He was horrific, right? We talked about how horrible he was, and he fell apart the second half of the year. He hit under 200. I mean, that season, he had 86 runs. He had 130 hits. He still hit with an OPS of 819 and had 29 home runs and 85 RBIs. I mean, what this projection is telling you is he's going to have his career worst year. Despite somewhat rebounding last year and having an OPS plus of 137 in the shortened season, I find that shocking.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his 162-game average, Rhys, if you just look at his numbers and divide by 162, so if he played a full year, this is what he's done over every 162 games he's played, 36 home runs and 108 walks. So if he stays healthy, he should be around 30 home runs and around 90 walks. Like, that's the only worry I have this year with Rhys is he's coming off of elbow surgery. I know it wasn't Tommy John, but if you look at players that have had elbow surgery, position players, that first year is pretty rocky. Like, they don't feel themselves swinging. Go look at Didi Gregorius' numbers the year before he came here. Not great. Matt Wieters, a catcher, was a very highly touted catcher about 12 years ago.
It's on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah. They called him Mauer with power. Didn't really work out that way. Actually went to his debut game, his first game in the major leagues down at Camden Yards. Didn't work out. He had an elbow issue. He had surgery. He never really was the same again. He actually was pretty good before that. So I worry about the extension on the swing, his elbow, how it feels. But if he's healthy and feels healthy, he's going to hit home runs. He's going to hit 25, 30 home runs. He's going to walk a bunch. And I'll take that. It's everything else I wonder about. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard here on this Wednesday night. The Joe Flacco signing, I'm in. I like it by the Phillies. And when we get back, I will give you my updated roster prediction for the 2021 Phillies on opening day. And when you call in, give us your thoughts on the best cheesesteak in the Philly area. 215-592-9494 at Sports Radio 94 WIP. All right, opening day roster projection 3.0 here for the Phillies. Here is how I see the 26-man roster 1 week from tomorrow. The catchers, JT Realmuto, who's back and played yesterday, and Andrew Knapp. The infielders, Rhys Hoskins, Gene Segura, Didi Gregorius, Alec Bohm, those are your starters. Scott Kingery as a reserve infielder. I have one spot left. I'm gonna save this for last because I really am struggling with this spot. I think the Phillies are too. The outfielders, Andrew McCutchen, Roman Quinn, Odubel Herrera, and I feel like this is on shaky ground now because he has not played well the last couple days. Bryce Harper and Matt Joyce. I feel like they might give Haseley a couple of days or a week down in Clearwater to just keep getting more at-bats to get ready. The rotation is the easiest thing to guess here. It's Nola, Wheeler, Eflin, Moore, Anderson. The bullpen. Here is my projection for the 8-man bullpen we will see on opening day. Jose Alvarado, Archie Bradley, Hector Neris, Brandon Kinsler as a non-roster invitee that makes the team, Vince Velasquez as the long man, Jojo Romero as the lefty, Connor Brogdon, and Sam Coonrod. So I don't have Watson making it. I don't have David Hale making it. Rondon's not making it. And the only spot I have left here is they need another infielder. If Brad Miller, Tucker's guy Brad Miller, is not going to be ready for opening day with his oblique, they've got a weird little conundrum here on who the next reserve infielder is. Because, I mean, Scott Kingery could play every position, but he can't play them all at once. It's not the old Bugs Bunny cartoon. Like, you only have one reserve infielder that comes in at a time or pinch hits, pinch runs, whatever. They need another guy. So the options are Ronald Torres, who's a Girardi favorite from back in the Yankees days. I think Torres stinks. He can't hit at all. Nick Maton, who they had up here before sending him down. C.J. Chatham, who was a part of camp. They really could use another infielder, and they could use Brad Miller to get healthy. The one thing that I kept seeing brought up by a couple beat writers to keep an eye on was other teams cutting players, that the Phillies could potentially pick up another guy from another team that doesn't make that team, and we have a new name we haven't even thought about on the opening day roster. Or they could do what, and I think what Scott said was interesting, if Brad Miller is a couple days behind, instead of freeing up a roster spot, what if they just went with 9 relievers the first week of the season? I mean, starters aren't going to go 8 innings on the first week. Like, maybe Nola goes 6 or 7 against the Braves, but you're probably going to need more relievers the first week as everyone just tries to get their arm together. I think the Phillies did that with Gabe and Klentak early in the season. They had 9 relievers, then they kind of phased it back to 8. I wouldn't be shocked if they did that. It would almost delay having to make a decision.
Yeah, I mean, they would do it with Gabe, especially because all the off days you have early right. on in the season, right? You could get away with a 4-man rotation the first couple weeks of the season. But it would be interesting. I mean, like, do you want to waste a waiver claim and move to the bottom of the waiver priority just for a handful of days?
For a reserve infielder?
Yeah, I mean, for a guy, unless someone falls into their lap that they think is truly an upgrade over whoever they could have as their utility man, then sure, go for it. But if this is a guy that's going to be up for a handful of days, then when Brad Miller's healthy on April 10th, you wave him and send him back down, and he gets claimed by somebody else?
Has there,
probably not worth it.
It probably isn't. Has there ever been a player less accomplished with more job security than Scott Kingery? I mean, Scott Kingery, there's no way you could fill out this roster and come up with the best 26 and not pick him. It's amazing. At some point, it's funny because we get people who still call the station and say they blame the last regime, they blame the last manager for Scott Kingery's issues as a hitter because maybe they changed the swing, the uppercut, the launch angle. You know what? If I'm Scott Kingery, I would send a thank you card every year to Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler. You know why? Their thought that he could play every position is the only reason he's a big leaguer. Could you imagine if Scott Kingery was only a second baseman? He wouldn't be here. He'd be in the minor leagues if he could only play second base. The fact that Gabe and Klentak said, yeah, I mean, I think he could play left. He could play center. He could play right. He could play short. He could play third. He could play second. He could basically play every position other than catcher on the diamond. It saved his career.
And ironically, if you look at his offensive stats by position, his worst is at second base. He hits 195 as a second baseman compared to 282 as a third baseman, 232 at shortstop, 310 in left field, 230 as a center fielder.
That's amazing.
He's worst as the second baseman. The place where they put him there from day one, he was going to be a gold glover and an all-star.
So if he was left at second, he'd be a 195 hitting AAA player.
Oh.
I mean, really, if he couldn't play every position, he wouldn't be here. So he's had a weird camp, a lot of strikeouts. Obviously, he's in the mix for center field. I think they need him in the infield as a reserve, maybe more than anything else. And he's going to be on the team. I mean, regardless of how he hits, he's going to be here, at least right away out of spring training, because they need that guy. I mean, he is a utility player. It's funny, that first spring training, when he broke out, and I was like, is he going to make the team? Is he not going to make the team? I never thought a few years later we'd be saying his value comes from the fact that he's a utility player. Like, he's that guy that every team kind of signs, and you're like, oh, that's the utility guy. Well, that's Scott Kingery. He was supposed to be a star. What was the projection that first spring training? Dustin Pedroia, but better or something? Like, a supercharged Pedroia?
Pedroia, but faster or with skill? Something like that.
Yeah, a more athletic Pedroia. Yeah, I mean, wake me up when we get there. Dustin Pedroia won an MVP award in 2008. So, yeah, Kingery's going to be on the team. It's just, it's incredible how he has not progressed. And, I mean, at some point this year, someone will get hurt. There will be someone banged up in the infield. He's going to get at bats. He's going to get a chance to play again. He'll come in. I mean, he can run. He could play defense. Like, there's value to him. It's almost like if we never gave him the contract and his name was like Ronald Torres, you'd be like, oh, yeah, it's good to have him. But he's supposed to be better than this.
Yeah, I mean, the expectations of signing a deal before you even make the majors. And remember when it happened? It was like, well, can't lose. Right? Like, worst case scenario, he's your starting second baseman for the next 5 years and you move on. Safe to say that they lost, right? Like, this deal hasn't really worked out for them
at all. The upside now is he's becoming a well-compensated utility infielder.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you let him play out his arbitration years, I think the Phillies would be making out in that deal.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the two big financial moves to lock up young guys by Klintak, well, two of the three were bad. One was great, right? The Herrera one was bad. Kingery one was bad. The Aaron Nolan one was maybe the biggest steal in baseball. That's the best move. I think of all the moves Klintak made, and I know he traded for JT, but he gave up Sixto in that deal. They signed Bryce Harper, but that obviously was a lot from ownership driven to make sure they got Bryce Harper. I would say the best move Klintak made in his time here was signing Aaron Nola to that deal. I think they signed like 4 years, $44 million. I mean, if Aaron Nola was on the open market, he would make $30 million a year.
I mean, his durability is probably his best trait.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, when you think about guys like, I mean, for instance, Zach Wheeler came here. And we weren't worried about Zach Wheeler's effectiveness. We were worried about, can we get 30 starts out of Zach Wheeler?
We only got
12?
Yeah, we still don't know that. I mean, he pitched all year last year, but 12.
But, I mean, but if Nola goes out on the open market, you can easily tell your fan base, hey, he's number one in innings pitched over the last 3 years. This is a guy who, I don't know if you can necessarily call him a throwback pitcher because he still doesn't pitch at the rate that guys like Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee and guys a decade ago pitched, but this is a guy that you can count on to be there every fifth day.
Yeah, would you say one out of three ain't bad for Klintak on the extensions? I mean, hit a home run with Nola, but those other two.
And those other two seem like can't miss.
I know. Yeah, they seem like there was less risk to them. Like,
yeah, I mean, Scott Kingery was the top prospect in the system and looked poised to be a Rookie of the Year candidate, and Adubel Herrera was already an all-star.
Yeah, I mean, those were the three financial moves he bet on for the future. Those were his three guys. I mean, he didn't bet on Reese. Reese has never been re-signed. And Real Muto and Harper were different kind of things. They were different. And the free agents he signed besides those guys were all short-term deals. Santana was short-term. Arrieta was short-term. The Klintak moves were never really long-term risks other than the three contracts. I mean, that's it. Those were the long-term risks. And I guess trading away Sixto carries its own risk because he now will ascend to the top of the Marlins rotation. But we are 8 days away. I cannot wait. Tucker, your final prediction here on Daryl Morey. By the time the trade deadline comes tomorrow at 3 o'clock, the Sixers will?
The Sixers will have a new player, but he won't be a starter.
Will his name be Wayne Ellington?
Possibly. I know we talked about Lonzo Ball earlier.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued by Lonzo Ball.
Oh, I am too.
I still think there's something there. And we talked earlier about how Morey kind of unlocked Kyle Lowry by using him and making him his starting point guard in Houston. I don't know. I mean, there's talent with Lonzo Ball. It's a circus. His family, his dad, everything. I could see it maybe working out.
23 years old. You get LeVar here to Philadelphia. Him and Howard.
I mean, Howard would have a co-host for his 8 to 10 show on Saturday.
Sparring on Twitter. Is LeVar even on Twitter? I haven't seen him in a while. What's LeVar doing?
I don't know. He's been pretty quiet the last 5 years.
I got to tell you what. I miss him. He was a riot for about 10 minutes. All right, fun show tonight. We have Rob Ellis coming up next. You guys have a great night on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.